A warm welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in to our broadcast. This is Henrik Palmgren coming to you from the west coast of Sweden up in Scandinavia. You can tune in to our radio show from all over the globe where internet is available anyway. Stop by our website redicecreations.com and check out all the good stuff that we have up there for you. Today we have filmmaker and author Jay Widener back with us on the program. Jay was first with us back in June, I think, last year, and he's been keeping busy, that's for sure. He's going to be featured in a History Channel special in October about the Lost Book of Nostradamus. He also has two film projects upcoming, one called Time Wave 2013, and the other one is called Infinity, and I hope we can get to both of those and talk more about those. Jay's films are always exciting and fascinating and beautiful pieces of artwork, so I'm looking forward to talking more about those with Jay. I also want to mention his websites, of course, jaywidener.com, but also take a look at sacredmysteries.com. That's for all the excellent DVDs that Jay is producing. Jay, it's a pleasure having you back on the program. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
How are you, and how you been since we last spoke? Keeping busy, I guess.
Life has... somebody hit the accelerator about a year ago, and everything is... I don't know whether it's coming loose or gluing itself together, but either way, there's a great amount of congealment going on in my personal universe, and it either means that time really is coming to an end, because if someone's actually listening to me, it can only mean the end of time, or it means that, you know, the world has decided that it's in such bad shape that it needs to listen to me.
or we might have the speed up thing going on also, that more and more events and more how should I put it, possibilities maybe are coming to the surface, and what we want to manifest actually is becoming easier to manifest. Could that be one thing also?
I would say that's probably exactly what's going on. I think that as we get closer and closer to the final end of this age, we're going to see that the constrictions that have held the human race down are going to be lessened, and we're going to move forward into a whole different way of understanding who we really are. I think that the Nobel Prize being given to Doris Lessing for her Shasta books is an indication of where we're going, because those are truly some of the most amazing science fiction books ever written, and they're all about the time that we're going through. So I don't think it's any coincidence that, you know, the Nobel Prize was awarded to Doris Lessing, who is really and truly a great writer. So I think it's just one more step in a long process.
Okay, never heard of her. Do you want to give us some titles for people who are interested in finding out more?
Yeah, if anybody's interested in reading, the books are called The Shasta, The Canopus Series, and Doris Lessing is a British writer. She's in her 80s now, and these books are extremely difficult to read. She's a very heady woman, and they're about alien angelic forces that are on Earth kind of directing evolution and directing culture in a secretive and quiet way towards the culmination of history. And I wasn't even aware that anyone had even read the books besides myself. So when I saw that she had won the prize for literature, I was completely stunned. And she won the prize for those books, which is incredible. 25 years ago, I wrote an essay for my university degree, and I wrote it on what I consider to be the two greatest works of the late 20th century, which I thought was 2001, A Space Odyssey by Stanley Kubrick, and the Canopus series by Doris Lessing. And here we are, you know, the early years of the 21st century, and both of those works of art are finally getting the acclaim that they deserve.
Wow, yeah, that sounds very interesting. Need to check up on those. How about things, the fact that things are in a kind of fiction form, do you think that we'll ever move away from that, or is that still a good way, so to speak, to disseminate, you know, information and even, you know, spiritual lessons and so forth? Is that a good format, so to speak?
I think it is a good format. I'm intending to go into fiction filmmaking in about a year. I have three projects that are in currently different stages of being funded. They're much more expensive than the nonfiction. But I think by the indications of ticket buying, more people are interested in nonfiction, at least in the United States. That may be because our media is now completely under the control of corporate forces, so people are yearning to find a different, you know, point of view, so they're going to see documentaries. But also the documentaries are getting more and more gutsy, and the filmmakers are feel more and more compelled to move forward into areas that are not being explored or have not been explored previously. And, you know, whether you agree with these films or not, it's very exciting to have them out. And, you know, again, we haven't really gone into the spiritual aspects of these documentaries, have not really gone into the spiritual aspects of the human condition at this point in time. I'm trying to rectify that situation by going in there as fearlessly as I possibly can, and to show people that, you know, there are political solutions, yes, but really what we're dealing with here is a spiritual problem. And until we solve the spiritual problem, we're not going to solve the political problem. You know, the spiritual realm supersedes and surrounds the material world. And so you must rise up to transcend to a higher level and recognize the problem up there before you can solve the problem at the lower level. So if you have a lung disorder, you can go and you can take pills or prescription drugs that will cure temporarily whatever problem you may have with your lungs. But if you're smoking cigarettes, that's probably more likely to be the problem. So you need to rise up to a higher level of consciousness, realize what it is that's causing the problem, and solve it at that level. And that's where we seem to be going right now. We're beginning to realize that all of the things that are happening are impossible to have. It's impossible to have them solved at the base materialist level. And so we can protest, and we can write our, you know, politicians, and we can, you know, yell and scream about how horrible everything is right now. But until we realize that, in fact, the real problem is that we are completely alienated from who we really are as a species, and then try to solve that problem, we're not going to solve anything. And that's really where I think the next few years lies, as far as what's interesting, what's going to be compelling to the, everything that we're facing around the planet right now, from environmental problems to political problems and everything. We took a trip to Peru to film Time Wave 2013 and spent a lot of time with the shamans, the Caro shamans, up 18,000 feet up in the Andes Mountains, and they have a real handle on all of this, and their descriptions of the ways that we have to solve the problems that face us are eerily similar to the same things that are being pontificated by deep ecology, by sustainability, by a reduction in our living standards, not a reduction that causes us to be hurting materially, but a reduction in our living standards of the things that we really don't need in this world. And I think that's really where we're going. And the people who understand that are going to be the ones who not only survive, but thrive over the next few years. And the ones that don't understand that are going to be paying a very, very, very heavy price for their ignorance.
Is this about, what you're saying here, is this about being smarter to some degree, meaning that, I guess our wasteful kind of attitude towards everything right now, that is what is depleting everything from our resources, even to our, spiritual aspects. Is this about being smarter in that sense, not being, you know, cutting down on just the material stuff because that's bad for the environment, but this is about still maintaining a level of, you know, technology in order to move forward still and evolve, but be smarter, basically?
Well, I think definitely we've got to be smarter about what we're doing, and I think that there's going to be a confluence I don't know if it's an increase in intelligence, although I've seen arguments that say that, and they seem like fairly good arguments. But and this idea of sustainability and deep ecology, and yeah, I think technology has a place to, you know, in this whole scenario. What that is, I don't know. Unless we begin to make technologies that are less toxic to the environment, it's going to be somewhat problematic to go forward into the future with a highly technical world. But I think that technology is really a transition between the ages. It's a way for us to communicate across vast distances and to travel and to view films and internet sites that are talking about worlds and ideas that we don't know about. And then as we grow familiar with these concepts, we will become more familiar with each other, and you know, as people who are involved in, you know, in heavy relationships, whether it be with family or spouses or friends, they know that as the longer that you get to know someone, the more familiar you become with them, and eventually you almost begin to read their mind. You become almost telepathic. And in fact, lovers, you know, often even complain that, you know, their spouse knows what they're thinking before even they do. And I think that, so technology, especially the internet and the media that's around today, is facilitating a kind of telepathy that's going to eventually envelop the Earth and all of us. And we can see this more precisely through the amount of synchronicities that are happening, you know, in your own personal life. If there's a lot of synchronicities occurring in your life, if there's unbelievable coincidences that are happening, and these are getting more frequent, then you are probably one of these people who is beginning to move into this next realm or this next age, which will be an age of total synchronicity and coincidence. And that's really where we're going. I know in my own life, the synchronicities are piling up so high and so fast that it's beginning to feel like a Marx Brothers movie, and I can't even sort them out anymore. Just too many of them. They're happening so quickly that I just shrug my shoulders almost on a daily basis and say, you know, why even bother thinking about it? Just accept it and go on.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Just, it's about surfing that wave and staying on that path. And if you, maybe even if you try to analyze it and break it down too much, you actually lose some of the momentum even, maybe.
I think you do. And I used to do that. And, you know, we used to have writers like Robert Anton Wilson and Philip K. Dick and the late Terence McKenna, and they were concentrating on these kinds of coincidences and synchronicities and analyzing them and showing what they meant. But today, you don't really see that kind of analysis going on. What you see today is just a kind of giving in to the whole the whole idea of this increasing synchronicity. And these increasing synchronicities and coincidences are driving the politicians and the world leaders completely crazy because they think they've got a handle on it, and then the next thing you know, there's some kind of weird coincidence or weird synchronicity which undoes everything that they've been trying to put together. In our own country, in the United States, you know, we had Bush had just won the 2004 election. He looked like he couldn't be stopped. He was going to put his agenda across, and it looked like there was nothing that could stop it in any way. And then out of the blue, Katrina hit and destroyed New Orleans, completely exposing the fallacy of the entire administration in front of everyone, and it's been downhill ever since. Bush claims that he has God on his side, but in that particular incident, God decided to not cooperate with Bush. And so the cosmic coincidence machine is definitely working overtime. And so you're going to see more and more of these things. As each person rises up into the hubris of power, they're going to be cut down by synchronistic forces. And this is really the age we're moving into. And that's why a lot of people are going to go bonkers as this happens, because the synchronicities are going to unnerve them and are going to make them extremely wary of the world around them. Yeah. And so they're not going to participate in the world around them. And so the only people that are going to be able to thrive in this coming age are going to be those who, you know, ride the surfboard of synchronicity and coincidence and groove with it so that they can you know, thrive, survive, and create a future that's more viable than the one we're currently creating.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And how about awareness and appreciation of this kind of how the universe and the magic about the synchronicity actually works? I'm thinking about not that these people who aren't aware of it aren't supposed to how do I put it? Take advantage or being able to surf this wave, as it were. But I feel that appreciation and awareness is a kind of a key component in the synchronicity itself. Would you agree on that?
I certainly do. I think that, you know, there was this scientist who did a study in England. And he wanted to find out, you know, what was the difference between people who thought that they were lucky and people who thought that they weren't lucky. And so he devised an experiment. And in this experiment, he created a stack of photographs. And ostensibly the experiment was that you were to go through, each of the persons that were in the experiment were to go through the photographs and pick out the ones that they liked. But what he did was he slipped a little note occasionally through the stack of photographs. And the little note said, if you read this note, please tell the interviewer and you will receive $50. And so he put this note inside the stack of photographs, and then he asked the lucky people to look through the photographs, and then he asked the unlucky people to look through the photographs. And what was astounding about it was, over 90% of the people who saw the note, responded to the note, and received the $50 were the people who were in the lucky category. And the people who didn't see the note, didn't read it, and didn't get the $50 were the people who were in the unlucky category. Mm-hmm. So we can see that luck, coincidence, synchronicity is about awareness. It's, are you aware enough to see the note, read it, and respond? Mm. And so that is what luck is. Luck isn't a supernatural thing. It's about awareness. It's about appreciation. It's about being about the value that you put in the landscape that surrounds you. And so highly intelligent people are people who have good pattern recognition, and they can recognize subtle patterns inside complex environments. Mm. And so when you combine highly intelligent people with lucky people, i.e. people who are aware of what's going on around them, then you have what is really going to be the survival, the people who survive what is about to happen to all of us. And so you can see it's almost like a spiritual Darwinism, in that the ones who have the capabilities will be the ones who win. And that's what's going on right now. And so the people who were born with a silver spoon in their mouths, who were born into upper-class families, all of the advantages that they've been given are going to be meaningless very soon. And, of course, they're not going to respond in a very nice way to the diminishment of their power. And so we have to be aware of that, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's very, very nice put, I think. I want to talk a little bit about the new Nostradamus documentary now. This is going to air on History Channel October 28th. Tell us about it. What's your part in it, so to speak?
Well, apparently a book of Nostradamus' sketches, well, actually sketches that were done by someone else based on Nostradamus' sketches, was found in a library in Italy and brought forth, and someone at the History Channel, God love them, decided to make a documentary about this lost book. And the filmmakers began giving this book to people, certain people, and asking their opinions of them. And of course, most of these experts couldn't make heads or tail about what, you know, was going on in these drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the line, a few months ago, they sent it to me and asked me what I thought of it, and I immediately began looking at the drawings, of course, very interested, because I've been studying Nostradamus for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I saw the, in some ways, more important than his quatrains, because it was a visual description of the end of our age, using astrology, constellations, and certain other drawings to show symbolically what he thought would happen, and the dangers, and the hope that Nostradamus had for this particular time period. And so I responded very enthusiastically to this book, and they immediately flew me out to New York, and we did a 7 hours of interviews, and I'm the main featured guest in this documentary, which is going to be aired on October 28th.
Mm.
And, you know, I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know. Hopefully I don't look like a crazy person. I'm not in complete trust of the you know, the straight media.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know what it's going to be, but I know that if they do it the way I would do it, it's going to be an absolutely incredible documentary.
Mm.
And so it's, you know, I'm looking really, really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be an adjunct to many of the things that are just now emerging about 2012 and about the emergence of the next age. And I can show, and I do show in the documentary, that Nostradamus was fully aware of the center of the galaxy, the galactic alignment, and the emergence of what would happen now at the end of this age and the beginning of the next age. And Nostradamus symbolically leaves us with a choice. And
mm-hmm.
that choice is, he in the drawings, the last two drawings that are really important, he shows us the Book of Life and shows us that in one of the volumes of the Book of Life, we survive and do very well, and in the other volume of the Book of Life, there's nothing on the pages.
Mm-hmm.
So Nostradamus is telling us in very clear terms, if you know how to read the alchemical symbols, that we are at that place now where we have to make a choice, you know.
Yeah.
And that's really what's going on. That's why I appear on radio shows like this. That's why I do everything I can to show and present this information and make the films and write the books, because I want as many people to know that there is a choice, and this choice is before us right now. It's not a choice that's going to come in 2012 or 2013 or 2020 or any other year like that. It's right now. The choice that we need to make, all the choices are right now. We have to do what we can right now to make sure that the human race gets through the squeeze hole that we're about to go through and come out the other side pristine, clean, and ready for our destiny.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask is a little bit, I guess, how it was working with the History Channel. The reason I'm asking is just because of the reason you just mentioned, because many people are just looking for kind of the timeline on this, the time period. Okay, so tell me what year it is, and you know, be done with it, basically. But I wanted to ask you, do you think that they kind of have a sensationalistic kind of presentation behind this, or do you feel that, I mean, how was it working with them? Was it a good crew? What's your sense of it?
Well, I mean, I like the crew. I don't think that they were. I don't want to chastise anyone, or put myself in some kind of superior position. They're just regular working people, and they had a job to do. And you know, to be honest with you, I was practically directing my episode, you know, on the set, because I knew what I wanted. And did they want the sensationalist? Yes, of course. All straight media, all the media of the corporate world wants nothing but disaster, wants nothing but the hell that sells. And while I think that needs to be examined in a very clear light and be open and honest with each other about the problems that we're facing, I don't take that tact. And I hope that they don't edit me so that I come out as some kind of madman advocating that the world is coming to an end, because I clearly don't believe that.
Yeah.
And now, what I do know is that they ended the show with one of my statements, which was that there's a choice before us, and it's extinction or enlightenment. And if that is true, if they did end the show with that line, then they are doing a good job.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely. I hope I can get a copy in some way, or see it online or anything. That would be very nice. Are you going to get a copy in advance, so you can take a look at it, or are you going to see it on TV, as it were, with us, the rest of us?
Not. I requested a DVD of it, and I, you know, because I wanted to see it. Now, they haven't sent it to me, which does worry me. But at this point, you know, you throw the dice, and whatever way they come up, they come up. And I did this, and I may never do it again, because it depends on how well they handle the subject. Now, my good friend John Major Jenkins, of course, appeared on a History Channel show about a year ago, and they just manipulated his words and turned the whole thing into an apocalyptic nightmare about the end of the world, something that John does not share either. And he was very upset about it. So I'm hoping that they don't do the same thing to me. If they do that to me, though, then they better know that they're going to have to pay a price, and that price will be me going left, right, center, every direction to chastise them, to call them out on the mat, and to wrestle with them to show that they manipulated my words.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't know. I hope not. I trust the producer. She's a very good person, and she doesn't want to go down that path. So that was the only reason I did it, was because I trusted her. So we'll see if that trust is betrayed or not.
In the end, I feel that anyway, people that are can see this with the right eye, as it were, can go beyond that, and hopefully this will spark some interest in your work and in other people's works also. I guess that's the main idea here.
Yeah, you know, the ancient Gnostics believed that there were these beings that lived among us, and they were called archons. And these archons were like kind of spiritual, dark spiritual forces that like to attach on to people who were angry or were into violence, and they loved it when humans fought each other and killed each other, and this would be almost a sexual charge to these archons. And I don't know if there really are archons or not, but I know that to give in to that kind of fear-mongering is only making us worse. And so I refuse to submit myself to that kind of ideal. And so I've been criticized in the film 2012, The Odyssey, for being for presenting a positive view of the future and of 2012. Mm-hmm. And I reject that criticism because, you know, let the Bush administration, let the major corporate media present these nightmarish scenarios if they wish. But I refuse to do it, and I'm not going to go down that route. And you know, whatever happens, happens at this point. But I'm not going to participate in that kind of thing. And so, you know, the main criticism that people make of me and my work is that I don't advocate this kind of fear. I want you to know, though, that it doesn't mean that I don't know that there aren't incredibly scary things going on and that the world is on the brink of destruction, because I believe it is. But just because it's on the brink of destruction doesn't mean it's going to be destroyed.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. By the way, regarding 2012, The Odyssey, did you get any response regarding, because you have one segment in the film that is about the Georgia Guidestones, very interesting, and many people have looked at this, and here we can take this again as a kind of that dichotomy that you explained, that there's two ways to look at everything here, as it were. Many people that have looked at this see the Guidestones, I guess, as a kind of sinister idea that connects with actually depopulation or mass killing, considering the one of the commandments, as it were, on the stone that talks about to keep humanity under 500 million. And other, I guess, could interpret that someone might have some kind of knowledge of a coming or looming catastrophe. But, I mean, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm glad I'm getting a chance to answer it. I guess my answer is that my feeling is that at the very core of Freemasonry, there is apparently a group of people who are following some kind of cycle, some kind of gigantic cycle. And so, you know, the one thing that we did get out of the Georgia Guidestones interview is that the people who built the Georgia Guidestones were Freemasons. And I think that that's what people are missing if they think that we're taking a, you know, not condemning the Georgia Guidestones. That's not the point of the film. The point of the film is to show the world what the Georgia Guidestones are saying and to show that there's a Freemasonic connection to the Georgia Guidestones as well as to the Denver Airport and the Cross of Henday. So once you realize that and you understand that the Freemasons, maybe not the ones that are alive today, but the ones that used to be around, had an incredibly prescient view of what was going on, and I don't think that they were creating it. I think that they were watching some kind of cycle. And so is this the commandments of a world that they're going to make, or is it their own description of the world that's going to happen after the age ends, and I can't answer that question. I'm still looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
However, in the new film, Time Wave 2013, we go into Benjamin Franklin's Magic Square quite extensively. And for those of you who don't know about Benjamin Franklin's Magic Square, this is like one of the most incredibly alchemical evocations ever in world history. And of course, Benjamin Franklin was a 33rd degree Mason, the head of the Freemasonic Order in North America, later the ambassador to France. And so my feeling is that through, especially with Benjamin Franklin's Magic Square, is that the there is some relationship between our genetic makeup and the timing frequency, the cyclic calendric timing frequency, and they know that something is about to happen, making it happen. They just have been keeping records and looking at things for so long that they know it's going to happen. And so I think the Georgia Guidestones are a message to the future world about the way that we should live our lives. And do I think that they're going to reduce the population? No, I think the population's going to reduce itself. I think that the world is going to become so bizarre and so weird that a lot of people are just going to choose to leave this world, not by murder, although that will happen, I'm sure, but by their own voluntary, actions. And I think that's where we're headed. I think this is what Nostradamus is talking about. I think, and he was probably a Freemason also, and I think that there's a group within the Freemasons who have the ability to cut across the angles of time, and that's really what Time Wave 2013 is about. It's a documentary about time. You know, we in the West, we own space. We can travel to Europe, we can travel to Africa, we own land. All of our mythologies are about how we have the right to own land, but we have no time. We're out of time, and we're reaching the end of time. And the indigenous people, the people in Peru, the Maya, Mexicans, the Tibetans in the mountains of the Himalayas, they don't have any space. They don't own the land. They live on the land, but they don't own the land. In fact, owning the land is a completely alien idea to them. But what they have is they have time. They own time. And so they can move forward, and they can move backwards in time. And this is, if you were an evolutionist or a Darwinist, then the ability to predict the future would be a great evolutionary driver, because you would know where the herds are next week, where the fish are going to be tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And your tribe, your village, would thrive and survive because of this peculiar tendency to be able to cut across the angles of time and see the future and the past. And you would know where you're going 10 years from now, 100 years from now, and 5,000 years from now. And this is the great human ability. We all have this ability, but we in the West have let it atrophy. And the only people in the West that seem to have this ability, at least recently, are the Freemasons and a few psychics here and there. And when I say Freemasons, I'm not talking about the club that meet to talk about business and, you know, the soccer game that's next week or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the Freemasons, the inner group of Freemasons who may not even be around anymore. Fulcanelli tells us over and over in Mystery of the Cathedrals that he's straining his oath to tell us the things that he's telling us. And so we can see that he is probably a member of some organization that has Freemasonic-like qualities. And since he tells us that the Cross of Hende was built by a master mason, we can only assume that he is a Freemason. So this is really what's going on. There's a small cadre within the Freemasonic institution that has a high shamanic intent. And I don't think that it's an evil intent. I think it's the ability to transcend time, to see the future, and to prepare for those eventualities. And I think that if you can look at a problem in one way and say, oh my God, it's a gigantic conspiracy, you know, run for your lives, and you'd be right probably in some ways. But you can also look at the same exact situation and say, oh, this isn't a gigantic conspiracy. This is the way that things unfold, and we, some of us, have the ability to foresee something that's going to happen and predict it, but that doesn't mean that we're part of the conspiracy or that whoever made the prediction is part of the conspiracy. You know, a window washer, a guy high up on a skyscraper washing the windows, can see the entire city below him. And when you're down on the ground, you can't. But if you were in your car in the city and you cell phoned the window washer and asked him if the traffic was clear up ahead of you, he could tell you whether it was or not, and you would avoid traffic accidents, traffic snarls, and all of those things. That doesn't mean the window washer is psychic. This means he's sitting up higher, and he can see further downstream than you can. And he's relaying message back to you, which helps you in your daily life. So to say that that there's a gigantic conspiracy is in some ways absurd, because it's like saying because there's a traffic accident 8 blocks up the road from you and the window washer can see it and cell phoned you and told you about it, that the window washer is somehow part of the accident and part of the conspiracy to make the accident happen, which is just completely absurd. It's all in how you look at it. It's all in how you understand the human endeavor, and then it becomes more clear what's going on. There's nothing wrong, you know, with planning for any eventuality, but just because you're planning for an eventuality doesn't mean you're making that thing come true.
This is a delicate situation in that sense. I guess you don't even want to scream wolf too soon, as it were, but what I'm thinking about is, I mean, what's the obligation here then, to beyond the fact that the Masons or top Masons here maybe then are trying to warn us about this potential upcoming or catastrophe in symbolic architecture? I mean, why not go out and verbally speak about this, or would that be a bad idea, do you think?
Well, I think it would be a bad idea, because how do you know you're right? And what if you're wrong? And then what about the karma of getting everyone into a complete panic over something that isn't right? I mean, none of us, as far as I know, can concretely predict the future. There are a few psychics, like Nostradamus, who could vaguely predict the future. Not even Nostradamus was concrete about it. In fact, you can't understand most of Nostradamus's quatrains about future events until after the event occurs. For instance, the Great London Fire of 1666, well, nobody knew that that quatrain that he wrote predicting the Great London Fire of 1666 was actually about the Great London Fire or anything about it until after the Great London Fire occurred. The same with Napoleon III. No one understood at all what his quatrains were talking about until after the reign of Napoleon III. So even Nostradamus knows that he doesn't want to affect the future. He wants you to see that it is within the realm of human ability to predict the future and to see the future, but not necessarily to affect the future. So he's very careful in how he words his quatrains so that you don't know what's going on until only after it happens. And so the message that I get from that is not, oh my God, I can predict the future and I'll know, you know, what lottery number is going to be, you know, next week and I can win $1 billion. No, 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 no. That's not what his message is. His message is that we can see the future, that we all have that shamanic intent, and that we can go forward and with that in mind, and that this gives us greater awareness, greater consciousness, and allows us, when that moment happens, to make better decisions. And do I think that there is an evil New World Order that's trying to create a militaristic, technological crypto nightmare? You bet I do. Anyone who doesn't think that's happening is blind and ignorant. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if you fall under that spell, then you will become part of it.
That's a very good way to put it. And also, I mean, that there is this, I mean, reservation error, so to speak, for the kind of the difficulty in sorting out, I mean, what you're describing there with the New World Order. Okay, so who does actually belong to that, you know, to those kinds of people who have those kinds of philosophies, I guess. I mean, for instance, the top Masons that you mentioned, I mean, are these the so-called elite, the royalty? I mean, Duke of Kent, head of British Freemasonry, the Windsors, are these part of the top Masons that you describe?
Ah, that's a great question. No, actually. I think we can see that historically there was a break, and Fulcanelli implies this without going into great detail, but if you investigate the history of Freemasonry, you can see that there is a break in Freemasonry around 1800 or so, and it's a break where the British Freemasons gained predominance and began setting aside the antiquated Freemasonry that existed before it. And I'm really speaking more about the French Freemasons who were set aside. And so I think that and this is why Fulcanelli is anonymous. This is why he doesn't want anyone to know who he is, not because he's trying to hide from us, but because he's trying to hide from them. And so there was a war within Freemasonry at some point. Now, I don't know when this happened, but there was definitely a war within Freemasonry, and the Freemasons that we've had for the last 150 years or so have been riding on the laurels of all that occurred before. And they are the evil personification of the events that their sages and shamans predicted would happen in the future. And they mistakenly believe that it is up to them to construct this future that they have been told about previously, in, you know, 1500s and 1600s, when the real guys were working, like Nostradamus. And so, you know, I think that the people that run the world right now are part of this pseudo-Freemasonic initiation, and there is another group which lies behind the scenes which has nothing to do with that group. And
maybe they even don't call themselves Freemasons anymore.
No, they don't. In fact, they completely abandoned it. And so, you know, I call the latter group the Illuminati, which I think is as good a name as any, although they are definitely not illumined. And the previous group I call, I really don't have a name. I call them the Masters of Light. I call them the Alchemists of Old. I don't know who they are, you know. I know that, you know, this other group, this we'll call them the good guys, for lack of a better way of describing them.
Sure.
The good guys don't act don't act in our world. In other words, you can't see them, although you can see them, but you won't see them on TV. They don't generally write books. They don't make films. They don't pontificate. They act in behind the scenes in odd and strange ways to influence events. The hermeticists of ancient Europe, no one knew who they were. They would walk into a village, and they could change the village without. They would be disguised as a beggar or an old man with a gnarly beard, and they would go into villages and they would change the feeling. They would change the way that things happened in a better way without ever taking credit, and no one would ever know that it was even them. This is really the role that, say, Gandalf has in Lord of the Rings. He is, if you read the books very carefully, you'll see that he's influencing and manipulating the situation. But it's a difference between Gandalf and Sauron. Sauron is manipulating the situation also, but he's manipulating the situation for the wrong reasons. Gandalf is still manipulating the situation. There could be no doubt about it. But he's manipulating the situation for the right reasons. And this is the difference between the pseudo-Freemasonic orders that exist today and the orders that existed before the dawn of modernity. And that's when you need to start looking at when things went awry. Around somewhere between 1750 and 1820 is really when we entered the industrial modern age. And that's when things really started going wrong. That's the time period that I examine more than any other historical time period, because I'm incredibly fascinated by the sudden lack of ability of Europeans to predict the future. It suddenly disappears. You can't see it anymore. We see the enslavement of children in factories. We see the forests of Europe being chopped down to feed the mammon of industrialization. We see the banks becoming extremely powerful, black magician bankers creating money out of nothing. So I pinpoint this break, you know, at least the exoteric break around that time period. I'm pretty sure I'm close on the money there.
Very interesting. I hope we can return and talk a little bit more about that if you want to in the next segment. But we're fastly approaching the end of the time in this first segment. But I do want to spend the last couple of minutes talking a little bit more about Time Wave 2013, your new upcoming film here. You mentioned that you guys were in Peru, among other things, filming. Sounds absolutely you know, incredible to be down there, of course, speaking to shamans and so forth. Was that the only place you were, or have you been kind of about and around for this film also?
Yeah, well, you know, the reason that I went to Peru is, well, first off, because the Cross of Hende mentions Peru. And so I wanted to find out exactly why the Cross of Hende was pointing towards Peru. And what I've discovered was the reason that the unknown builder of the Cross of Hende was pointing the earnest student towards Peru was because the true spiritual alchemy, the true spiritual alchemical tradition is still alive in Peru. The Caro people escaped the conquistadors and went up into the high Andes, 18,000 feet, and lived there for 400 years, speak no Spanish, have nothing to do with the Spanish or the European culture that conquered Peru, and they have managed to hang on to their traditions. What's interesting about this is that they did a genetic background search of the Caro people of Peru, and the people that they're closestly related to are the Tibetans of the Himalayas.
Really?
And so, yes, and we know that Tibet has the alchemical tradition still intact also. So my feeling is that the My feeling is that the Tibetans understood the secret of the transmutation of the body and of the human destiny, and they, I don't know if they came across the Bering Strait or whatever the theories are, somehow they made their way into the New World, and I think that they ended up finally in the Andes Mountains, which is the closest to Tibet that we have in the Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And so that was the reason that I wanted to go there and find out what they really thought. And, of course, now I know that they have an entire tradition of igniting their light body, their luminous energy field, in the caves, in the Andes. And they have an entire alchemical tradition still today that's intact, and anyone can go down there and learn it.
Wow, that's amazing. And you, how did you hook up with some of these people? Did you contact someone down there? How did this work?
Well, one of my good friends is Dr. Alberto Violdo, who's been studying with the Incan shamans for 25 years. He's a medical anthropologist from originally from Cuba, came to the United States after Castro, graduated from the University of San Francisco, and he abandoned the entire Western medical paradigm 25 years ago and went down to Peru to learn everything about what was going on, originally just the healing techniques down there. But through that, he discovered the alchemical tradition, and then we met in, I must have been about year 2000, maybe 1999, right when it hit the height of the research into the Henday material, and we hit it off, very, very, very good friends, and so he was our guide through the caves and into the alchemical underworld of the Karo. And so, because the Chinese have destroyed Tibet, because the pseudo-Freemasons have destroyed the true alchemical Freemasonic traditions in Europe, there's really almost no place left that is holding on to this thing. And I'm sure that we're going to lose it in Peru very soon because they're becoming contaminated by Western ideas. The glaciers are melting rapidly in the high Andes, forcing them down into the 12,000, 10,000 foot mountains. So they're coming down, they're starting to rub shoulders with the already westernized indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And so I can see that the ideas are going to become contaminated very quickly and lose their pristine quality. So I wanted to gather as much of these ideas as I could. And of course they have a prediction called Pachacuti, which is that there's going to be a new emerging human being that's going to come in around 2012. And they don't mean that it's a being that's going to be, you know, not us. It's that we are changing our genetic structure and makeup, possibly through these alchemical light body practices. And this is the hopeful prophecy that we are advancing towards in this world right now.
Wow, that sounds absolutely fascinating. And all of this that you're talking about, I guess people could find out much more about if they get your new and upcoming film, Timeway 2013, right?
Yes, it's all about that, and it shows how Benjamin Franklin knew about all this, how he was obsessed with the Mayan time system. Pretty incredible, actually.
For people that want to know more, tell us how people can get a copy of this film. When is it going to be out?
It'll be out beginning of next year, so beginning of 2008. I'll send you a copy when it comes out, and it's going to be shown all across the United States and Canada, and we're going to open it up in Europe. We've just, We decided about 5 years ago that we could not rely on anyone to help us, so we set up a worldwide distribution service of our DVDs and films, which is just now reaching its culmination. So we're now in every continent on Earth but Antarctica, and I guess the penguins don't want to see our films. And so we are now right at that place where this information can be disseminated in a free way and understood, hopefully, and we're translating it into Danish and French and Portuguese and Spanish and Russian.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all, it's all happening right now. It's kind of a crazy, chaotic thing. I'm not really a businessman, and I've had to been forced to wear that hat, and it's not a comfortable fit. But nevertheless, I had to do it in order to be able to accomplish what needs to be done to get this information out before it's too late.
That's right. And I guess the main websites here are jwidener.com and also sacredmysteries.com. Can people order from the Sacred Mysteries site?
Yeah, they can order it. You can order it right now. It'll be $19.95 American, and as soon as it's out, we'll send it to you.
Oh, thank you. Wow, I'm looking forward to seeing that very much. It's going to be great. Everybody do check it out, jwidener.com and sacredmysteries.com. Jay and I are going to take a little short break here and continue talking a little bit more in our subscriber section. But for this segment, Jay, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you.
Tune into our subscriber interview with Jay. This is something you don't want to miss. We're going to talk more about Ben Franklin and his magic square. Numbers, time, DNA, language, the Hypercube, Saturn, Roslyn Chapel, and his upcoming project called The Alchemy Code. We'll also get into a fascinating discussion about the Archons and a possible connection to life extension technologies and possession. Subscribers, get ready for an excellent discussion with Jay Widener. If you're not subscribing to Red Eyes Creations, you are definitely missing out. If you sign up with us for 3 months, you'll get full access to our entire radio archive. And this interview with Jay also goes hand in hand with our new short film about longevity and the Grail in our new member section. Click on subscribe from our front page, redicecreations.com, to find out more. Much more good stuff is on the way. Thanks to everyone for listening, and thanks to Fredrik behind the controls. Until next time, all the best and take good care.